moving on to other areas of interest. Is there, I just need to know just for a little context, is there anyone in the community that we've created together here that is unfamiliar with the Jewish ways? If so, gingerly raise one's hand. Very good. Ah, very good. Then we'll direct most of our energy towards you because the point is there. That's interesting. And we're going to have a question and answer thing. Rebut, you know, go nuts on these guys. Me, I'm a little more sensitive. They like Teflon. I came to Crown Heights, you know, probably, again, you know, from Manhattan. I had a nice little crib up in Hell's Kitchen. I was doing okay. And I went to spend a Shabbos with the Jacobson family. Can I reveal personal stories or no?
Go for it.
Shh.
Yep. So anyway.
You didn't get my permission.
You, I don't need, the older brother.
So anyway, I'm going, you have to go to synagogue. I never really liked synagogue all that much. It was like I landed on Mars, really. Because I liked it, though, but it was like, this is weird. All of a sudden, there's a foghorn or something that goes off. It's time for Shabbos. Everyone got to stop. So you guys went on your own. It must have been a plan. And here I am now walking with an elder Hasidic statesman, a pillar of the community, a Russian, part of the real inner circle of Chabad, mystical. Of course, I saw one guy go, Simon, is this guy like some sort of mystic? Yeah, he's a plumber. You know, they all look to me like something. But I'm walking to shul with Simon's father. And I'm thinking to myself, it's kind of, he's the guy that also thought I was a little retarded. So I was a little, already a little bit iffy.
Peter had this withdrawal. And he was speaking so slow.
I still
slow.
Do. I mean, you know, so
my father whispers to me as Metalaman.
Is he all with us?
Yeah. He's
So I find myself, I'm walking to shul with Simon and Yosef Yitzchak's father. And I'm thinking, wow, this is a heavy thing. So obviously, you know, we're walking and he's going to lay on some sort of mystical thing that's going to change me forever. Now, meanwhile, I told you back in Manhattan, I had a girlfriend. You know, she was a dancer at a club. Not that kind of club, but she was a dancer. Not exactly, you know, trained in the yeshivot. But anyway, but that was just beside the point. So now I'm walking. It's a quiet night. My first time in Crown. I'm walking. Walked hand in hand. You know, it's very slow, deliberate walking, kind of just slow. And what is he going to say? Something about the parasha, the Torah? Obviously something religious. Walk, walk, walk.
You know, the Jewish woman is the best lovemaker in the world.
What the hell? What the... It really caught me unawares. But I must say, two things. One, he knew me well. And number two, he was completely right. Simon. People are calling me left and right. One guy is getting divorced, one guy can't find a partner, one guy has to think if he wants to get married. I go, what do you have to think about? I'm not sure I'm turned on. That's the one thing you don't have to think about. You know, how come there's so much trouble, would you say, in relationships, intimacy?
There you go. No one cares about that in New York City. Number one topic, what could I say? I was giving a talk at the Learning Annex up in Midtown Manhattan. Maybe like 60 people. And to get like the barometer of where people were at, I asked them this question. How many people believe in love forever after, in eternal love? Out of the 50 people, one woman raised her hand, which surprised me, because I thought even if they don't believe it, they're going to say they do. One woman raised her hand, and I must admit that probably she wants to believe it. I don't know if she does. But this was like a mature group, and they clearly were not naive about it, and they lost their idealism. And the conversation ensued, and I said, you know, the reason we don't believe in love forever after, when you're most people who have gone through a relationship or two or three or four have been disappointed, is because nothing in this world, nothing in life is forever. Not the food you eat, not the money you make, not your age. We're all mortals, and we're all constantly, the law of nature is we are eroding slowly. So why suddenly, when it comes to love or marriage, relationships, should we believe in immortality? One exception. Everything is mortal. Everything dies. So it's true when we're younger. What are these extracurricular sounds? My beard again? No, don't. Yeah?
It's time for a shave.
It's fine.
Time for a shave, he tells me. Okay.
I'll hold it.
This is what younger brothers and younger rock and roll stars do to these older rabbis. What are you slapping my shirt for? You have a sound, man.
That's good. That's good. All right, next.
But now it's all crumpled. It won't come out good in the pictures.
Fine.
You know, the picture is the main thing. Did you get that?
We'll stage the pictures after that session.
So why suddenly one thing? So when I said when we're young and naive and we read a romantic novel or a movie, so you believe in this idealism. But once we've faced reality, everyone knows a relationship is never simple. It's complex. Especially once something has been broken or disappointed or betrayed, you slowly start losing that glassy-eyed belief. Anyway, what happened here in this room was a great experiment for me, as well as for the group, because we had very frank discussion about it. And people acknowledged, yes, that's true. And if you've been hurt enough, you don't want to go back there again. It's not worth it. So, you know, the old idiom, you can't live with it, you can't live without it. But then, my next question was this. Why is it then that we still search for it? Something deep inside most of us, even after disappointments, you still want to believe that it's possible. And you're always like looking for that couple, the perfect couple. Maybe they have it. They have the magic. There's something inside of us that gravitates toward it. And we do respond when we do read about it, even though we may not experience it ourselves. And I think this lies the heart, the answer to this, what lies at the heart of the answer to this question is something we were all talking about before, one way or another. That perhaps the greatest platform for the challenge that Yosef Yitzchok mentioned between faith in God in a world where materialism is the number one priority, it plays itself out more than anywhere else in the world of intimacy and love. Because that's where it counts. If you're going to believe in immortality, or in different words, in God, so you can talk about it philosophically, when you pray in times of need and despair, we all, you know, people turn to something greater. But where it plays itself out in real life is, can you have a relationship with someone else that is immortal? In different words, godly, divine. And in this discussion I had with these people, which I'm just sharing briefly with you here, is this, that we are not used to it. We don't have any tools to access this eternal love. Yet something inside of us tells us that it makes more sense. And frankly, when we search for a relationship, we look for physical compatibility, emotional compatibility, spiritual compatibility, intellectual compatibility. What we are missing mostly is spiritual compatibility. What do I mean by that? I mean by that is a shared vision of two people who share a vision that's greater than the sum of the parts, that they want to build something that's more than each of them can ever build on their own. Most people today have no idea what that means. Not because they're bad, not because they're malicious, not because they're selfish, because they weren't exposed to such an option. I tell this to people, they say, what are you talking about? What does that mean? I mean, I know what I'm attracted to. I know I can communicate with this woman or man, depending who it is. I know I am stimulated by their mind. I'm stimulated emotionally. I'm physically attracted, as I say. But what are you talking about? What else is there? And that what else is happens, that little what else is the difference between, frankly, a true love or not true love. And how can you really sum it up, a lifetime of relationships in just a few minutes? I would just say this to all of us, including myself. The material world, by nature, is a selfish world. It deals with self-sustenance, self-indulgence. It doesn't leave room for eternity. Because anything that's related to the self is always going to be, as I said, mortal and will die. In Judaism, the first and foremost message is that there's a third partner in a relationship, and that partner is called God. Now, I have to explain that this is not the God that most of us believe in or don't believe in, some type of God in a religious context. When I say the word God, I always tell the story, I should share it here too. I remember early years when Peter was coming to my class. You may remember this. So Peter was not so resistant as some others were. But a lot of the people coming to the class were Jewish, some not Jewish, but spiritual, but not from traditional sources. Their Judaism came from, their spirituality came from Zen Buddhism, LSD, which is not an acronym for Let's Start Davening, by the way. Just as pot is not an acronym for put on tefillin. This is, by the way, it sounds like a joke, but it actually happened in South Beach. A Hasidic rabbi came down there, and he was a naive guy coming out of yeshiva. And there's, of course, spring vacation, and he's out there hanging out in the South Beach. He's going to grab a few Jews. And there's thousands of them, and nobody seems to be interested in him. He's trying to put on tefillin, do some other mitzvahs with some of the Jews. So one of his friends says, you should put up a big sign, Rabbi, free LSD. And free pot. And when you got closer, it said, let's start davening and put on tefillin. So everyone lined up. He had nothing else to offer but tefillin. Well, so these Jews were very open, but not to necessarily traditional Judaism. So I tried an experiment. And this is critical, what I'm going to tell you right now. Because to me, it's the secret of all communication. And particularly trying to address, like, what does God have to do with love? You know, love is about sexual attraction, intimacy, nurturing. Well, it's because we have no idea what the word God means. So I tried an experiment. Instead of the word God, you know, realizing that people are stereotyping me and what I'm teaching, the beard, the yarmulke, and all that. Instead of the word God, I used the word higher reality. Or when it was a more new age group, it was non-existential states of subconscious energies or something like that. The essence, capital E, the essence. And instead of the word Torah, I use the word blueprint or roadmap. Not that roadmap, the roadmap. Instead of the word mitzvah, connections. Instead of the word geula, redemption, destination. So this was this discussion about a journey with a roadmap, connections, connecting to the essence. And everybody was like intrigued. Wow, this is great. We'd love it. Who doesn't want to connect? And then if after a few weeks, I think it was Kenny actually, someone asked me, Rabbi, are you talking about God? So I said, yeah, but don't spoil it for the others. Bottom line was that in this short little episode, to me, like the whole challenge and difficulty in addressing something like God within love. We have no concept what God is. Where did you learn about God? Where did I learn about God? We never had real formal education about it. The United States makes sure that remains a philosophical topic because it may intrude on personal rights and freedom and all of that. But the bottom line is that when you study Torah, and especially the spiritual dimension, God is the essence of existence. Without that essence, no love between a man and a woman can endure the vicissitudes and the ups and downs of life. Period. This isn't if or but. You don't like the word God, use the word higher reality. Subconscious, non-existential energies, whatever you like. But one thing it's not man-made, and it's not another product at Saks Fifth Avenue. It's something that is ethereal, that's beyond the mystery of love lies in the essence of that divine.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
Are you saying that atheists cannot be well married?
What I'm saying is that there
are.
Yeah. What I'm saying truly is there
it's
are
a
no.
Bold statement. You know,
yeah, yeah.
What
well,
you just said.
Well, this is going to be bolder, I think.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that there are no atheists. That's it. Good night.
Thank you. That's good. I like that. This guy this morning, I was talking to this guy. He goes, I get it. I don't know how it always gets into this Jewish thing. He's just a guy in the record business. I don't believe in God, he says. I hope that doesn't offend you. So why are you spending 2.5 hours telling me how proud you were about your son on his bar mitzvah? A side point.